Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome back to In the Pink, the podcast with me, Natalie Pinkham. Thank you so much for your feedback on lovely Lee Dixon. He was a joy to chat to. I know I say that about everyone, and I sort of mean it, because it's lovely just talking to lots of different interesting people, but he really is a very nice man indeed. So thank you, Lee, for your time and your story and sharing some of your innermost thoughts with us. That was great. We will revisit that hopefully in the next series and get his thoughts on whatever's happening on the pitch, both on and off the pitch, in fact. So he's got good, interesting views on all things football. Okay, my next guest is full of energy. My goodness, this woman is a proper little pocket rocket, full of energy and ambition. She's actually my first winter sports star I've spoken to. She is the snowboarder Amy Fuller. Amy's got loads of interesting stories, loads of energy, and a smile that lights up a room. Ladies and gentlemen, Amy Fuller. So here we are in the leafy suburb of southwest London with a let sign outside the front door because this is your new proud home. Amy Fuller, thank you very much for welcoming me in.
Thank you very much for coming. Excited to host you in my new home.
It's great, isn't it? So you've settled here. And is this going to be your home for some time? Like, how do you see things playing out?
Definitely envisage staying in southwest London. I've already been here for a year and a half. So just moved slightly closer into town. I absolutely love it here, just being by the river. It's beautiful, and you know, 25 minutes to Heathrow at 6 a.m. is perfect for me because I'm constantly in and out.
I was going to say, I doubt the travel has abated much because you are constantly on the go. You're like this little ball of energy that everywhere I see is just bouncing from one thing to the next. But obviously most people know you because of your snowboarding and two Winter Olympics.
Yeah, two Winter Olympics. Sochi 2014 and Pyeongchang 2018. And yeah, it's crazy how all of that essentially happened so fast. Starting snowboarding age 12, age 16, picking up my first sponsor. And it just spiraled from there. The introduction of the Olympics for slopestyle in 2012. So it became my sole mission to represent the country at the Winter Olympics.
So when you knew that that was a possibility and this was a path that you could realistically take as a career, that must have been like, wow, I can actually follow my passion and be paid to do it, which, you know, most people could only dream of.
Yeah, really, really surreal. I've come from a background of many different sports. I would say that was probably the problem when I was younger. I did motocross, I did gymnastics, I skied, I played lacrosse, I played basketball, you name it, I did everything. And there was this one moment where my dad said to me, he's like, you're quite good at sport, but you're pretty average at all of them. Why don't you like pick one? And I love snowboarding, but I never ever imagined that I could make a career out of it. I remember watching the X Games on TV, which is a huge American contest, and seeing that and thinking, wow, that's, you know, light years away. How could, you know, the girl from Kent in England ever, you know, compete on the world stage? But when I was 16, I got noticed by Roxy, which opened up this amazing opportunity. It was crazy. I came home from school having just started my A-levels in Northern Ireland, actually. And
why did you live in Northern Ireland?
My family moved there, in 2007, just for some work opportunities. And they've settled there, and I've found my way back here through all of the travel. It's logistically not the best place to live for travelling. Mm. But it is beautiful there, and I love going home, and that is home.
And you do count that as home?
That's home. I have a house there, but rent here in London, and then I go back there to see my family. So everyone's over there now, my nan and granddad, everyone. So we're completely English, but everyone has resided in Northern Ireland, randomly. Where were we though? About the snowboarding.
Yeah, about it being a viable career option.
Yeah, I never really saw it as a possibility until I picked up my first sponsor, and then the opportunity was presented to me to join the GB Junior team. And as soon as I finished my A-levels, it was basically a case of, this is possible if I put everything into it. And I did.
And by everything, how much kind of sacrifice did you have to make? Or as a family, how much did everyone have to buy into it? Because, as you say, coming from Kent, it's not a normal kind of transition to make, is it?
It's definitely not normal at all. I would consider getting noticed being really lucky, but then, you know, really utilising that opportunity. So every time there was an opportunity to go on a trip, I was there, and the first one there, and I stayed. I was the first one on the hill, and the last one on the hill. And I think that's the unique thing about coming from the UK. You really appreciate that time on snow because it's not on our doorstep. Mm. You know, if you live in Austria and it's a snowy, cold day, you might not go riding. Whereas when you're only out there for a week, you ride every single day, first lift to last lift. And it was really about putting in the groundwork when I was on snow. And then my career just built from there.
How hard was it though? How much of a commitment? How much?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it was. I was away pretty much all the time. In the middle of my A-levels, I remember I was away for a month in the States. And yeah, it's crazy how my career kind of catapulted. I remember getting my first allocated budget. So that was the second year with Roxy, and they gave me some money. At the time, that was 3,000 euros. And it seemed like so much money. I was like, wow, I can go on like 6 snowboard trips if I play my cards right. But obviously that's not a lot of money to do it. And it was that year that it was like, okay, well, if I invest this amount of money into that contest, if I do well, I'm going to be able to go to the next contest. But if I don't, then I'm stuck. And there's one really clear moment that sticks out in my head. And I think I had about 200 euros left. And it was like, I don't think I should go to the contest. And one of my older friends who'd been on tour for a while, she's like, come on, Fuller, you need to go to this. You've got this. And I turned up, I rode the best I've ever ridden and won 6,000 euros. And it was like, sweet, game changer. And then that spiraled into further sponsorship and opportunities. So, it's crazy how things happen and how that transition of, you know, going into a full-time sport and essentially living out of a suitcase. And I think that's the non-glamorous side of it. And it's crazy, you know, age 18 to sort of 22, you know, one week you're staying, you know, with the GB team in some sort of like grotto, and there's three of you in a room, first then going on a trip with Red Bull, who was one of my sponsors, and staying in like a 5-star hotel in Austria. Mm. So the contrast was amazing, and I think
keeps it real.
It's so humbling, and that's one thing that I've really taken away from it, and I've learned how to make the best out of any situation on the road.
I like this idea, you know, it's the old adage, isn't it? You're only as good as your last game. But I like this idea that you have to keep excelling in order to jump on the next step, as if almost the step doesn't appear unless you're ready to pounce off the back of the last one.
Definitely. For sure, the first 3 years of my career, it was just go, go, go. And then when the opportunity was presented to go to the Olympics, that sort of format changed slightly, and there was a bit more of a structure in how I went about competing. But before that, it was all about the X Games. And my ultimate goal, mission, was to be the first woman to land a double in competition, which I did, after multiple injuries and setbacks. But in 2012, at the European X Games, I landed the first double in competition. And that really created a platform for me then to get further sponsorship, get into other contests. Because that's one thing as well. You can't just rock up and do like the X Games. Like, there's 8 girls in the world that get invited to the X Games. So yeah, it was almost like a conveyor belt. You know, you have to stay in the mix at the top, like any elite sport.
So explain to those who don't know, which kind of includes me, I have to say, how hard it is to land the double. Like, what does that actually mean, and how much actually has to go into that, and how surprised were people that you managed it?
At the time, it was, I would say my strong point was my aerial awareness. I haven't been snowboarding as long as some of the other girls on tour, so definitely I utilised my aerial awareness to my advantage. So it was almost like, okay, this is the quick route to success, which meant that I then definitely skipped some hurdles, which made things harder for me later in my career. But by learning that, I was in New Zealand the summer before, and this was the introduction of the airbags. And I was lucky enough to get on the Red Bull airbag, a private session, and I tried it on there a couple of times. And
So that was almost like what we have in Formula One as a simulator. It's the closest thing you're going to get.
Yeah.
To,
right. So, and 2012 would have been like the introduction of that. We never had that before. So before that, you'd go up on the mountain and you'd build a jump and you'd fling yourself off into the power. But it's into the powder. But it's very much a risk assess sport, and there's so many stages and strategies into perfecting a particular trick. And I got it dialed on the airbag. I took it to snow, a very similar jump next to the airbag. And then it was just about applying myself and peeling back the layers and the nerves to be able to do it in a contest. And I think with something new, with something big that you've never done before, you never really feel ready. But it's about the visualization and the process. And if you can visualize yourself learning it, even when you're standing at the top and you get that, you know, your eyes are closed, you're ready to drop in, and you know, you've got that like gulp of like, sort of, it's not like fear, it's like that, it's like an adrenaline rush, but it's a nervous adrenaline rush, and you're like, oh, am I ready? But if you can visualize it, you can do it. And I could visualize it, and I visualized it over and over again, and everything was right, the conditions were right, you know, it was sunny, it was warm, the jump was in good condition, the landing was soft. By that, I mean it wasn't sheet ice. So yeah, I managed to pull it off. And that definitely would be, I would say, the bolt hold of opportunity it created for me to sort of
That's amazing. Go
that
on to single moment
yeah,
has,
yeah.
has just like launched
yeah,
you.
Completely.
Literally and metaphorically. I can guarantee that anyone listening is now busily searching for it on YouTube to see it, because visually, incredible.
Yeah.
How dangerous...
Oh,
is
it's
it?
So dangerous. When I look back at some of the things I've done, it's not dangerous when you're in the right place, mentally and physically. So much of it is about being in a very stable mental state. You for sure have to be like happy and buzzing, because if you go up there like all dour and serious... You know, snowboarding really is about having a good time. It's a sport that you enjoy. And if you're up there and you're not feeling good, it's just not going to work for you. It's almost like, okay, let's go back down to the cafe, have a coffee and reset.
Because we were talking before about Nick Doherty, because obviously he's done this podcast. And we were talking about the extent of how his game just unraveled. And we were talking, you and I, about the importance of mental health and well-being to be able to perform at your best, which, you know, sounds pretty obvious. But actually, when you take it to something like this, when you know, you're risking your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
To hear you say that you've got to be in a happy place to even begin to think about trying it, it's quite interesting.
100%. And I would say that yoga is a huge passion of mine, and that's something that progressed through my career, especially in between the two Olympic cycles. It was like holding body and mind together, and I utilised that as almost like a rehab tool as well as like a preparation tool, but also like my quiet time to like mentally visualise what I wanted to achieve on the mountain. So yeah, mental health in the game for sure is key.
Wow. And in terms of the yoga, so you were running that sort of parallel to your training. So how much time, given that it's finite on the mountain itself because of where you live and everything else, how much could you do? You know, you obviously had this facility at Red Bull.
Yeah.
But beyond that, is it gym work? Like, what else are you having to do?
Take to be a snowboarder? Yeah. It takes, physically, you have to be strong, fast, powerful. There's a lot of plyometric work, a lot of strength training, but then there's also the aerial awareness side. So gymnastics, trampoline work, which is something, again, which has been introduced more recently. And that really helps with the transition of taking new skills, putting them into a foam pit, and then putting them onto a jump. So when I was back in the UK in the summer, I would do quite a lot of cycling, because we go out and ride for, you know, hours at a time.
So just for fitness, is that a fitness thing?
That's just purely to have that endurance base, but then you also need to match that with explosive power, strength and speed training. So yeah, I was training full time as an athlete from the age of 18 to sort of last year, really.
And we did a really cool thing at Sky Sports with the gymnastics at the O2.
Oh, cool.
And Simone Biles was there, who's obviously just insane.
She's phenomenal.
I mean, she's just, how creative can you get with the things you do? And are you limited? Like, would you go in and go, right, this is what I want to try? Because I remember Simone Biles, obviously, you know when you're good, when you've got moves named after you. But she was the one setting the boundaries for herself.
Yeah.
So how much of it is it down to you, and how often do people kind of interject and go, sorry, Amy, you just can't do that, you nutter.
No, it's definitely, it's all about creativity. Snowboarding is creativity. It's almost like gymnastics. I would say the spins and rotations are pretty on par in terms of how extreme they can or can't be. One of the tricks that I learned on a rebel camp was this cab double 900, which is imagine if you're a skier going backwards into a jump, doing a 180 and a double backflip. There is no ceiling in women's snowboarding right now. It's progressing so rapidly with the introduction of the airbags, and in particular the young Japanese riders are absolutely dominating. So it's a very, very exciting time for the sport, and it's also scary because there is no ceiling to the progression.
That's exciting though. To watch. Why are the Japanese doing so well? Is that about funding? Is that a cultural thing that they just focus more attention and
I would say it's because they were the ones that invented this particular bag, and this airbag sits, if you imagine a jump, so you have your takeoff, you have the deck, which is the flat bit in the middle, so that can be anywhere between 20 meters to 30 meters, and then you have the landing, and this airbag sits on the landing, so it's like an actual landing slope made out of bouncy air, and they created that. So they've been training on that for, you know, years, and the rest of the world is just catching up.
Okay, that's so cool. In the Pink is sponsored by Bose, who've been perfecting the art of sound so that you can listen in unrivaled comfort. The new Bose noise cancelling 700s take it to a whole other level, so you'll always hear exactly what you want, no matter where you are. Also, be heard like never before with their unrivaled 4-microphone system, which isolates your voice whilst cancelling the noise around you. Pretty cool, huh? Always stay connected with Bose's first-of-its-kind augmented reality function that will change the way you think about travel, exercise and learning. Never be caught out, because they have an excellent 20 hours of battery life. They come in black and silver, so you can work them around your style, your little fashionistas. And you can treat your ears with the Bose Noise Cancelling 700s. It's a sound experience like no other. Now, back to the interview.
So what's next for you? Like, do you feel like you haven't snowboarded for a while?
Yeah.
I know that much. I know you're going tomorrow, which is amazing.
I am going tomorrow, yeah.
But do you feel like you've achieved what you want to in snowboarding, or do you feel like there is still more to do? Because you're still very young and you've got it all.
I'm at a very exciting phase of my career. As I was kind of telling you earlier, I have just ran a marathon in North Korea and filmed a documentary. So completely out of my realm and territory. And I absolutely loved everything about that experience and opportunity. And I would love to do more like that. Mm. Within snowboarding, I want to go into the more creative side, which is backcountry. So that's off-piste, big mountain riding. So you go up with a backpack, avalanche transceiver, probe, you hike for 2 to 3 hours, and you find lines, cliffs, and create jumps to film the beautiful stuff that you see on the television. Mm. So that's actually what I did last year off the back of the Olympics. I filmed in Japan with Roxy, which was amazing, shot their global campaign. And I plan to be doing more of that in the softer snow rather than the icy contest conditions.
Right, okay, so... And where would you find where do you find that? Are they icy conditions? Because lots of people have used them, and
yeah.
Therefore, okay.
So generally,
so it's tougher.
Contests are savage. Mm. You have 40 to 60 girls in an event, along with the guys. You're riding the same course. Mm. Sometimes the weather isn't great. We saw in the 2018 Winter Olympics, it was the worst female snowboarding event in history, I would say. They ran the contest in really dangerous conditions. A lot of people got hurt. 3 girls got injured. And the podium wasn't a true representation of the standard
talent
of women's snowboarding.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It was a joke. And it was a huge question as to whether they should have run it or not. Mm. And they did. And that does happen a lot in the sport. So it's about us as riders coming together and making a stand and saying, no, we're not riding. But at the Olympics, they're like, okay, well, we're going to run it. You're either in or you're not. So we all dropped in and it was awful. So really not a true representation. And to be honest, I don't want to dabble with that anymore. I've done it for a long, long time. Mm. And I'm excited about the other opportunities within snowboarding and the opportunities that snowboarding essentially has opened for me. I mean, this year has just been so random, but also so amazing at the same time.
So let's talk more about this marathon in North Korea, because that is bonkers, you know.
Yeah.
There's very few people that can say they've ever been to North Korea, and less still who can say they've done a marathon.
I honestly didn't even know that you could go to North Korea, mm-hmm. like casually. I mean, it wasn't really casual,
I'm not going to lie.
But for me, that was an eye-opener in itself. And that all came about because...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Because if I was ever to run a marathon, the year after the Olympics was the year. And in 2018, I was standing on the London Marathon finish line with Tag Heuer. And I was like, I'd much rather be running this. And the marketing director said, well, yeah, you can next year. And then she messaged me in the November going, okay, so are you actually up for this? And I was like, let me speak to my mum, because I wanted to do it with my mum. My mum was like, give me a few days to decide. She was like, yep, I'm in. So we tackled it together, and it was always something that we had discussed, that if we were to ever do it, we would do it together.
That's so nice.
Because we both like running, but you know, yeah, casual runners, like 3-5 miles, never the 26.2 realm. And I posted a story in January after coming back from Japan, actually. And I went for a run in Richmond Park, put it on my story on Instagram and said, I've just run 10 miles, covered in mud, soaking wet, and we got completely lost. And off the back of that, Leah Hervey, who used to work at Sky, now works for the Olympic Channel, saw that I was running London, and she messaged me and said, hey, you don't fancy running another marathon, do you? And I was like, ha, no thanks. And she said, it's in North Korea. And I was like, tell me more. So I remember sitting in my flat with my mum, actually, having this obscure phone call, and it was like, so we want you to front a documentary, and it's going to be about a marathon in North Korea. There's a marathon, a half marathon, and a 10K. And my first question was, can I run the half? And she was like, no. 6 weeks later, I was on a flight to Beijing, having to leave all of my electronics, my phone, any means of communication in China. And then I hopped on a Koryo Air flight, which is a one-star Russian, ex-Russian plane to North Korea. And it was, yeah, quite the experience.
So what was the point of the documentary? To sort of show how sport is universal, and that even behind, you know, the walls?
So essentially, we went into North Korea to peel back the layers behind their sporting system,
right,
and to showcase how sport really is the universal global language that can bring people together. When we were there, everything else was irrelevant because the sole focus was the sport, and we connected with the people of North Korea through sport. And that opportunity in itself, whilst we were there, opened up so many doors because of the respect of the Olympic body. So we were there with the Olympic Channel creating a documentary around their sport and essentially how they are excelling. And to be honest, the marathon was just the icing on the cake at the end of it all. But we went to meet the gymnasts, the weightlifters, all of their top athletes, along with seeing some very, very strange things.
Like what?
En route. So the first day, we had to go. It was like they had set up like a guided tour, and the first day was the food factory. And we're like, well, why would we go to the food factory? We're not here to see your food. And they're like, no, you have to come and see the food factory. So we went and we did this tour. If you imagine like some sort of archaic, icy cold building, it was freezing with all of these little men, you know, on computer screens making the food which the people there eat. So in particular, one of the items that they expressed of importance was French bread. So Sir Kim himself had sent two of his people, which is not normal, out of the country to go and source a recipe for the best French bread. So there we had the French bread. We had chewing gum.
Like a baguette,
yeah.
And they'd recreated the baguette.
Yeah.
Because they'd heard that the French bread's the best in the world.
Yeah, and it was like, we have the best bread. It's made here, and this is the best bread in the world. And they had various other things. but it got stranger. So as we walked around the factory, we went floor by floor up. We ended up on the top floor. So you imagine a factory, you know, industrial factory. You end up on the top floor and it's a swimming pool, like a tropical oasis, with security guards standing around this pool, waterfalls. But then on top of the factory is the Olympic weightlifting team on their day off, surrounded by security guards. And there was a spread laid out for us. It was beer, chicken feet, white bread, cakes, and sweets. And that is what the athletes were eating on their day off. It was so surreal. And the gentleman who owns the factory wanted us to stay and have dinner with him. And I was like, no, I want to go back to the hotel. So that was just one snippet of the randomness that we experienced. And it's all in the documentary.
So where can we see the documentary?
If you go online, it's literally Olympic Channel and it's called Running in North Korea.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's about to launch on YouTube as well.
And why did it matter to you to do that?
For me, I loved seeing how sport really is something that can connect people and open so many doors. For me, sport's been a huge part of my life, and it has created this platform for me to essentially live my dream. And it's amazing how through this documentary, it really is a showcase of how true and how sport can create some amazing possibilities.
What an amazing opportunity for you on a personal level as well. That's so cool.
I can honestly say it's up there with one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah.
As strange as it is to go into that political environment, it really wasn't about that. Coming back, I ended up on like BBC World News, and you know, they were grilling me like for the political angle.
What did you
learn? And I'm like, yeah. We weren't there for that. We were there to see the sport, and I can honestly tell you they are producing athletes at an extreme rate. It's
really?
It's like a factory system.
Eating cake and beer.
No, but outside of their day off, it's like eat, sleep, train, repeat.
Really?
It's a factory of success. Like watch this space, because the North Korean athletes are going to dominate, especially in the gymnastics, diving, and the weightlifting. Surreal, like animals.
So when you standing where we are and looking at them, it's obviously veiled in mystery and intrigue, and you know, what did it feel like being there and looking out? Did you get any kind of view of the world through their eyes?
I felt trapped. I felt completely cut off from the world. They have no idea what's going on outside. I had no communication for 8 days, and we got quite friendly with our guides. So one of them was called Lee and the other one was called Mr. O. And I said to Lee, I was like, you know, like, let me know if you ever want me to come back and like help with the development of snowboarding in your country, because they definitely need some help in that department. And they are training, they've got mountain facilities. And I was like, how can we stay in touch? We can't. That's it. We'll never speak to them again. Crazy.
What do you think they think of the rest of the world?
I can tell you that Mr. Lee loves the Scottish, because he went to the Commonwealth Games. And
he did, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Because he works for the Olympic Committee, and still the athletes travel. And it was really sad, actually. He was telling me when he travels with his athletes, they are given the smallest amount of possible time to be on a flight layover in a country, because people don't want them in their country. So they land in Europe and they've got a 30-minute layover. So he said they always land and they have to sprint because nobody wants them in their country. So even in transit. So that was really, really sad to hear. Obviously, it's not them personally, but it's
the regime,
which is horrendous. And when he arrived in Scotland, he said the people of Glasgow are the nicest people he's ever met, because he had no money, because they don't have, you know, they have a different currency system. Not quite sure how it works. And he had no money. And a Glaswegian man picked up Mr. Lee and dropped him off for free at his Holiday Inn hotel in Glasgow for the Commonwealth Games. So surreal hearing, you know, like random snippets and things like that, that, you know, that's all they experienced of Scotland. And they now think it's wonderful. obviously Scotland is wonderful. We've got some lovely mountains.
Yeah. God, Dad, that's sad.
But it's sad. Like, they're really so cut off. Yeah. They have no idea. The athletes are the lucky ones. They get to travel.
Yeah.
They get to, you know, see a snippet. You know, I saw the North Korean athletes at the Winter Olympics, but even then they walk in a sort of in sync, in a line, in a regime, you know. So even within that environment, when they're taken out of their world and put into our world,
yeah,
they still have to move and walk and talk in a particular way. And I remember trying to talk to them there, actually. Yeah.
You did.
I was like, all right, guys. Yeah. Didn't get much feedback. No.
Come on. With all your charisma, you must. It's so interesting, though, isn't it? Because what you're talking about, if you obviously combine discipline with perfect diet and constant training, I suppose it's like the 10,000 hour rule, you know, you're going to produce great athletes.
No, 100%.
But then I go back to your earlier point about happiness and a strong state, mental state of mind, but, you know, when you approach a sport. So it's interesting to know, and who's to say they're not happy? They may well be. Maybe, you know, we don't know. But it will be very interesting to see how the next few years and decades pan out in terms of their sporting development.
Oh, 100%. I think they forecast holding an Olympics in North Korea, which is just mind-boggling after going there and seeing everything and how they operate. I don't quite understand how that could work. But I think the North Korean athletes are happy because they don't know anything else and they are being looked after, they're being fed, watered and housed, and they are the elite of that country.
Yeah.
And they
it's probably hugely respected, and you know, what a privilege, what an honour for them. Wow, God, how interesting. I mean, and also, I'm quite surprised that you were allowed to do the documentary at all, but that's great.
Yeah, crazy. We definitely had to jump over a few fences and negotiate with them whilst we were there. They reviewed all of the footage.
Right.
Which was actually in my room. That's another funny story. They were in my room for 5 hours, reviewing the footage and looking over all of the camera equipment, which then made me quite scared. But yeah, you can think what you like, right? I was terrified the first two nights. Because it's a very strange environment.
It's just different.
It's just different. Very, very different.
That is very cool.
Along with Bose, In the Pink is sponsored by Tag Heuer, Swiss avant-garde since 1860. Excellence, precision and elegance. Their timepieces are designed for those who love challenges, which is a great fit for this podcast because most of the guests share that sentiment.
So what, you know, with that as a sort of grounding and looking forward from that experience, which does sound amazing, what else would you like to do? If you could wave your magic wand, would you like to do more documentary stuff like that?
I would love to do... I'd love to have another opportunity to do another documentary. Mm. I've had a few opportunities within television as well, which I've absolutely been loving. Mm. I love buzzing around and, you know, being in the mix, as I like to say. But no, I've been recently developing Fuller Fitness, which is a YouTube series which drops every Sunday. At the minute, there's a different athlete every week, but we're going to spice it up, get some different people. So I dropped the first one 2 weeks ago with Adam Jamili, fresh off the back of the world champs. So that's something exciting in the background, which is...
And so what fitness tips for that we as viewers can learn from?
Yeah, it's for everyone. There's also fitness within the home, and they're just tips and tricks to essentially motivate you to get outside and move. Movement is medicine. That's my vibe. And I love my health and fitness alongside everything else I do. So, yeah, it's a unique little platform for me to be able to share my passion for that.
That's
outside
great.
Of everything else I do.
And what do you sort of see the future of women's sport? I mean, it feels to me to be in a really good place right now, and it feels like it's getting better and better and better. But I do still feel there's a long way to go, particularly in Formula One. You know, I want to see far more women in the sport at every level of the sport. You know, obviously, the ultimate dream within my lifetime of a woman winning a Grand Prix, maybe a World Championship. How do you view it from inside your sport, but also the experiences that you've had across others?
It's been a really interesting year in that sense. I've done quite a bit with women's football, and that's been a huge interest of mine over the summer, having it been, you know, the summer of sport, and there's been a huge profile increase on women's sport, but I believe it's still not there yet. Mm. It's definitely on the up, and like you said about the Formula One, it'd be amazing to see a girl in the mix. Mm. Like, why not?
I mean, for me, there's no reason why it can't happen, because, you know, physically there's nothing that precludes a woman from getting in a car and driving it very fast. You know, there's and I talked actually with Jenson Button about that. You know,
yeah,
he's a world champion, so his opinions counts for more than mine, but he agrees. And, you know, it's about accessibility, it's about perception, it's about having strong role models that girls can emulate. And do you feel that is happening now across the board? Do you think the role models are there? Because I feel like we're all making the right noises, but, you know, seeing big crowds at the football and the cricket, which is fantastic. Is that trickling down? Is that reaching?
I think the role models are there. You know, we have the role models in football, tennis. You know, I'm sure there's role models within the driving world as well.
Well, we've got the W Series, which is amazing, all female series, which, you know, will hopefully produce and is producing some great female talent that can hopefully then come through and ultimately launch them into Formula One.
I think it's a huge part of it is about the grassroots level as well, and accessibility to the sport. And I think through the profile increasing of various sports over the summer, it definitely opens the doors and inspires the younger generation. And I think that's what it's all about, is getting the youngsters doing the sport and, you know, not worrying about, you know, being sweaty or muddy or, you know, using that image as a ray of positivity and confidence. And I think that's I would say one of the biggest, most challenging factors for women is their confidence. You know, when you enter a gym, for example, and, you know, the weights room is full of men lifting heavy weights, but there's no reason why a female can't be present and be feminine in that place, you know?
Well, because image matters so much to young girls growing up, and they need to feel that playing sport is cool, is sexy, you know, it's all the things that make them appeal to blokes, if that's what they want.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly, I think that's there. That's there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely there. And that's our job as role models for the next generation, to showcase that it's cool to be sweaty, it's cool to lift weights. You know, it's like debunking the myths that, you know, football's for boys. It's not for boys. Mm. Girls can play football. And snowboarding, skateboarding, you know, they might be extreme sports, but girls can do extreme sports too.
Because, you know, growing up, I was always a tomboy for playing sport. And I'm sure you've had that label plenty of times.
Definitely.
But actually, why is that being a tomboy? Why can't it just be very feminine and cool to play sports as a girl?
I think we're moving in the right direction. Mm. I really do. But there's definitely work to be done. And I think coverage is a big problem in women's sport across the board, even though this year was the year of greater coverage. But we're still not seeing on the back and the front of papers, of the newspapers, of the sports shows, you know, it's still male heavy, male dominant. Mm. And there are differences in performance, but those levels are closing, especially in my sport. You know, we've seen the first female triple cork now. Guys might be on quads, but trust me, the girls are catching up, and girls can be strong, can be powerful and beautiful at the same time.
Mm. That feels like a very natural end to what has been a lovely chat, but also just that feels a good place to finish.
I feel like it does as well.
Thank you, lovely Amy. That was a fun way to spend a bit of my afternoon chatting to you. And you're one of life's little energizer bunnies. Yeah, so good fun. Lovely person, Amy Fuller, ladies and gentlemen. Loads more strong female role models, I think I should put it that way.
on the way, including Annabelle Croft, Dame Kelly Holmes, and actually a few surprise guests on the way. Oh, by the way, keep listening because we are going to start running competitions to win those Bose noise cancelling 700s. They are wicked. They are well worth getting your paws on. So yeah, keep listening and I will tell you how. Speak to you soon, and rate, review, subscribe. Give us your feedback on all the guests here on In the Pink. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.